Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
67 of No Spin Rodeo. I'm joined with our producer, Greg Teagarden, and of course, the First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism and the one that tells you what you want to know when you want to know it. Hello, Kendra. It's like you're at home, huh? Is that right?
I'm home. And Greg, if I'm all lopsided, I'll move this. You just have to tell me because it looks like I'm lopsided, but
I mean, you're down in the corner a little bit, but that's okay.
Lopsided visually, emotionally, spiritually. There's a lot of lopsided that you could be addressing there.
Well, yeah, in my, gosh darn, it's making it worse. Okay, but anyway, in my defense, I just returned from a really cool trip, and so I went to Colorado Springs, and I went to go to the Cowboy Ball at the Hall of Fame Friday night, and I went to the induction Saturday morning, and then I went to Cheyenne to Slack on Sunday, and I flew home Monday morning, and seriously, I thought I was going to get arrested at DIA. So if I'm a little haggard, like, seriously, I was circled by 7 security guards, taken to the side, detained for over an hour, made to show my ID again, give them my phone number, my email address, and all this personal information. Why? Because on Sunday, I bought a pair of like 4-inch tall Capkin toy pistols. And I had them in my check bag, or no check bag, in my carry-on. And I did get frisked. I did not get thrown on the floor, but it was like that for over an hour. And I'm like, you can see it's still in the packaging that it says 6 and under, right? They're like, we take these things very seriously. It was nuts.
Well, did they confiscate them?
No, they gave me a choice. We will throw them in the trash right here, or you can go all the way back through the mammoth security lines. Well, Oda dropped me off 2 hours ahead of time. So an hour and 15 minutes in, I thought, I'm going to, you know, Charlie is 2. She's just starting to use Taylor's old shaps, Lane's old rope when she rides the spring horse. And I'm like, these pistols are worth going back through the chaos of the lines. And so I did it and I made it. They allowed me to check the Capgun pistols, but I feel like there should be like warnings or something, like do not attempt to walk through security with these toy pistols. But anyway.
Well, I don't think I would. I probably wouldn't bring a toy gun on. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. But I'm glad you made your flight, and I'm glad the toy pistols made it home.
Lesson learned. That was probably not wise. I forget it's 2025 and not my youth. But anyway, how are you guys?
I'm good. Yeah, I'll go. We're starting the process of bringing everything in for the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo. I'm in my RV at the Utah State Fair Park. There's giant tents going up and 26 golf carts getting delivered, and it all kind of really begins tomorrow. It takes us about 6 days to get everything loaded in for the show, and then we have a kickoff event on Saturday. And then we start rodeoing on Tuesday. And then Ogden and Spanish Fork start early because, remember, they're ending on the 24th. And we've adjusted our dates really to help the Cowboys and, I think, the fans. We're going the 22nd through the 26th, which is kind of breaking tradition up here, Kendra. You normally don't You end on the 24th. It doesn't matter what day of the week it falls on. And so our board approved that on my recommendation. And I think everybody's going to like it, right? It gives some flexibility. It lets people travel a little bit. So
explain why it was so hard and fast that it ended on the 24th.
Well, because the 24th is Pioneer Day, and it's a state holiday. I mean, like, there's people that get vacation for the 24th for Pioneer Day, and they don't even really know why they're getting the day off. I mean, they know it's Pioneer Day, but it's the day they officially, it's a holiday, official state holiday, recognizing the settlement of the valley and the traditions of Utah. And there's a huge parade in Salt Lake City, and most everybody gets off. I don't think federal workers do. I don't know, but a lot of people get off, and a lot of people do stuff on Pioneer Day here. And now the parade will have 8,000 or 10,000 people in downtown Salt Lake, and most rodeos and this is the first year that the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo has not ended on the 24th in its grand tradition this year, and will end on the 26th. And I think what I'm hoping is that 24th will fall in the 5 days from here on out, but it gives us a flexibility to move things around to help for scheduling of contestants, for animals. I mean, it's all kinds of things, right? It's livestock and bucking stock and contestants, and it just so happens that the 24th is a Thursday, and so, you know, we would have been, you know, Spanish and Ogden are going to end on a Thursday, and then there's a Friday, Saturday, and in the promoter's world, you can't make up Friday and Saturday, right? So I'm excited. I think it's going to be a good change. The only other change we made is we pushed the performance back 30 minutes, and it's because of the heat. That 30 minutes makes a big difference. It gets the arena fans in a little bit more shade. It's probably about 4 degrees cooler for all the contestants and livestock. Last year I took temperatures, and 30 minutes later it was about 4. One night it was 6 degrees cooler. So a little bit later, starting at 8 instead of 7:30. And so, yeah, we're winding up, wrapping up, and you're heading to Salinas, right?
Yeah, I'm headed to Salinas to the cool coastal breeze, usually what, 70 degrees or something. But I think interesting to people who don't know, since I've been to your glorious rodeo several times, one, that this falls after, but never, ever, ever is an event held on Sunday in Utah, correct?
Correct.
That's because of religious reasons, right?
That's correct.
I don't know if everybody knows that, but I think it's interesting. And because it's a day of rest.
Yeah, it's a day of rest and
it's family day, right?
Family day and day of rest, and it's taken very, very seriously in the state of Utah.
Yes. And the one thing that, I mean, great, great rodeo, but I will sorely miss the hospitality at Salt Lake City. Has the best banana pudding I've ever had. And everybody raves over it, and we all overindulge because it's delightful. So have some extra for me, fellas.
If you happen to be one of the contestants, my staff know it. One of the 5 nights is when they do the barbecue Mexican tacos, and everybody, like, that's almost like what night is the rank pin out, right? Everybody wants to know when the barbecue, and I just don't tell anybody, right? Because otherwise they'll, but it does get, we eat barbecue every night for a lot of nights, and I guarantee you by the end of the rodeo, we're not wanting any more barbecue for a while. I guarantee you that.
The banana pudding and the peach cobbler, yes.
Very good. Very good. Greg, what are you doing?
Well, I just got back from Oakley Gunnison Run. Funny story about Gunnison. The sound guy there is Stretch, and one of his speakers caught fire up on top of the roof of the announcer stand, so he ran up there and put it out. The best thing was that on the last day, the committee gave him an honorary fire extinguisher as a trophy for his due diligence. So it was kind of an interesting rodeo.
Who announced it? Because someone was lighting up the auxiliary lines there to make a sub catch on fire.
Well, actually, I believe it was the Anthem singer that caused the fire, because they stretched out Home of the Brave for a minute. And but Andy Stewart does that one. He does a great job. And yeah, it was interesting. He got his little glimpse on a Cowboy Channel waving a hat on a smoking speaker. So
That's cool. Well, let's get rolling. Today we're gonna just gonna fly on the tips of the wings a little bit. We're gonna hit some feedback and we're gonna kick it off because all of us are always interested. Kendra kind of brings us the current news in rodeo. And so, Kendra, what's going on that maybe somebody doesn't know about?
Well, I'm just going to hit a few little high notes here and there. I'm not going to rehash everything, but over the weekend, Saturday night, you know, the NFR Open ended in Colorado Springs. And then Sunday afternoon, Calgary Stampede ended. So everybody's talking about the Calgary Stampede. And I don't know Cooper Cook yet, but he won the bareback riding. He was 94 on Calgary's Disco Party. And in the steer wrestling, okay, this Scott, I don't know if Scott Gentner, if I'm saying that correctly or not, but this one rodeo, the Calgary Stampede, is like the rodeo that won't let Scott retire because he's won it two of the last 3 years. He went to the NFR and then, you know, a few years ago, and he's like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to stay home with my family. And then he won Calgary. Well, then he went back to the NFR. And now, Kerry wins Calgary again. You know, two of the last 3 years is, you know, rather significant. So here we go. I don't know how his travel plans may or may not change, but that rodeo has been good to him. He's a Canadian, but man. And Zeke Thurston.
Canadians seem to do well in Calgary. I'm just saying, keep going.
Well, now, I guess I've never point blank asked Zeke Thurston if he has dual citizenship, but his mom's a Canadian and his dad, Skeeter, is his mom, Linda, and then his dad, Skeeter, is from Nebraska. So Zeke lives in Canada, does he not? Anyway, this was his Alberta. This was his fourth Calgary title. And remember, he was in on that last year. Was it with Sage Newman? Who was it with? Where they went back and forth on who won?
Yeah, they ran across the green.
But this year, Zeke won it. Okay. Now, the calf roping, Shad Mayfield won it. His dad, Sylvester, everybody called him Silver when I was a kid. He won Calgary 40 years ago. So that's pretty cool. Okay. In the barrel race, this woman named Anita Ellis, who I nor most people have yet to meet, who was not in the top 50 when Calgary started. First of all, she swept her pool riding two different horses, Axe and Rico. Rico, the gray she ended up winning the 50 grand on, is only 5 years old. But second was Cassie Mowry, the reigning champ of the world. And third was Brittany Posey Tanazi, who also incidentally the night before won Colorado Springs. So, but this Anita Ellis, wow, that's a pretty large splash. You know, and I think she made it in from the qualifying event. It wasn't from world standings, obviously, you know. So nuts, because she's likely headed to the NFR when a lot of people did not know this person. Anyway, good for her. The bull riding. Wacy Shala won the bull riding on Wayne Bold's Haunted Hotel with 86 points. And remember, Wacy and Stetson Wright have been duking it out. And Stetson Wright was not at Calgary, which I saw Stetson's parents, Cody and Cherie, at Colorado Springs. And I was like, what? I'm just curious, you know, why the boys weren't there. And apparently only two of the four were invited. And then perhaps at the last moment when someone was going to no-show, Stetson was invited, but it was last minute and only in one event. So anyway, he wasn't there. But with Wacy winning it, you know, that's pretty significant for the World Bull Riding standings and the LRM too, for that matter. Okay, the breakaway roping brought the house down, first time ever for equal money and in the purse at Calgary. And this local girl, Shelby Boisley, grew up, now Shelby Medjid, grew up like 30 minutes from Calgary, so just right on the outskirts. And she was coming off of winning Colorado Springs Saturday night. She won the breakaway at Calgary, won over 81 grand of those two rodeos. And really cool was seeing, I think I mentioned last episode, that her husband and world champion, fellow world champion, Haven Medjid, is out until hoping to be back by the third week this month of July with back injury. He was there and watching those two interact. You know, he was up there supporting his wife, and you know, Haven won it last year and couldn't rope there this year to defend his title or whatever. But to see his Canadian Calgary local wife with the stands full of family and friends, and you know, fans for this local Canadian girl, the look those two exchanged was really neat. And 81,000 at two rodeos for a breakaway roper is like every breakaway roper's dream since there was the first one. So that was very cool. A few, I think we mentioned it before, but it's worthy of mentioning again that the PRCA events, 80% of it counted toward the world standings, and in the women's events, the WPRA counted 100% of it. So again, back to, you know, Shelby and Anita Ellis winning fortune at Calgary, and it all counts for them. I thought that this was really interesting. I just found this out in the last day or two. When I would nightly, late at night when my work was done, watch the recorded episodes of Calgary, every single day I'm like, right after you make your run in the barrel race, a guy walks up to you with what looks like a hat, like you're drawing something out of the hat. And the girl reaches in and draws something. And I'm like, is that for the, you know, the run position in the next round or something? And then I'm like, no, it's not. Because then I'm like, but that doesn't make sense, because they would do it on the third day of their pool. Well, they're not drawing positions for their next round. And some of them who didn't make it wouldn't be drawing that. So a barrel racer actually posted an explanation, which I really appreciate. It's for random drug testing of those horses. And the barrel horses are the only horses drug tested, and it's by a random draw. And apparently up there, and I won't get too far into the weeds, but being a lifelong daughter of a horse vet, it's interesting to me. This particular barrel racer who spoke publicly about it said, like, they don't want you stacking drugs on top of each other, like Butte and Bantamine, for example, which is very common in performance horses. And so it's kind of interesting that they do that, and they only do it with the barrel horses. So, I mean, I don't know, do they do it to the chuck wagon horses? I have no idea. But in the rodeo, she said the barrel horses are the only ones. So I thought that was interesting.
It is. It's interesting that, because it takes a little while to get those results back. So, and I think this may have come up. I'll look in Calgary's history where they've had to go back and adjust things. Something tells me, and it maybe it's my memory's bad, but you know, these results come in later, and it used to be a disqualification if the results came in past their allowed limits. But I did know they did testing, because we had conversations of that with the Calgary Stampede and in some committees at the NFR, and I do recall that. But I do remember one of the things that was concerning is that someone could be crowned a winner and that winning's taken away. Now, I don't know that applied this year, because I don't know the specifics of what they tested or how fast that turned around. But that was a conversation point historically in, you know, drug testing, because it was about, you know, like drug testing. Should more of it happen in the States, right? That was the conversation. Should there be more random drug testing in the PRCA? And at that time, the problem was getting the results, right? If you got the results and documented them 15 days later, reshuffling the cards is hard to do at that point.
It seems like a bit of a nightmare to police. And I feel like cowboys and cowgirls, like their horses are so vitally, they're nothing without them, that they're going to take the best possible care. And when I had teething babies and the pediatrician said, give him some Tylenol, I did. And so, we no need to, we don't have all the specifics, but cowboy people regard their horses so highly that I most of them, I don't believe would abuse their animals in any way. So I'll say that. Okay. Another thing I was going to mention is that, it was, I think, mentioned briefly in our last episode that this year, because of the addition of breakaway roping, they only 3 advance from each pool. We mentioned that instead of 4, which is customary. So on Sunday, where they crown the champions, instead of being 12 to start with and 4 in the showdown round for the 50 grand, this time only 9 advance to Sunday in the first round. And then only 3 advanced to the showdown round. And so, anyway, they did mention, if it's a fact, that everyone who made it to Sunday got a paycheck. Now, the way it reads in the results, there were people that got like a no time and won 10 grand, for example. That's interesting, right? You know, that counts in the world standings. But anyway, the top 3 is 50,000, 20,000, 10,000 is the top 3 places. And again, you make it to the top 3, you buck off or you whatever, you get 10 grand that counts. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I think I've said this on, I know I've said this on No Spin, and it's my personal narrative. I think maybe you've disagreed with me. I just think that if you don't qualify, if the rules are it's a qualified ride, 8 seconds or no time, I don't think people should get paid.
I don't think we came into full disagreement. I think, though, that what did happen, because I've seen it happen at other rodeos where it was like this big qualifying process. If you make it through all the hoops to get to the end, the way that, you know, because I asked a bunch of cowboys and stuff, I'm like, okay, so what do you think about this? And their feelings, at least several of them told me, it gives us an other viewpoint, is if you make it through all the hoops to get there to the end, and you have to make a special trip that may be several states away, it may be a 17-hour drive to get back there, pretty rough if you get 0 in your Christmas stocking for making it through.
I agree.
Yeah.
With our rodeo or with other ones that I've done, there's been a standard pay to everybody that qualifies, right? Like $1,000. I'm making up the number, right? So you're guaranteed $1,000 to make it the short course. And the intent to that is to pay everybody's way to make sure that it didn't cost anybody to come and compete. But if you throw $10,000 that are points into the, it depends on how you look at it. I mean,
I see your point, because that's better than most rodeos pay.
That's for 5 rodeos.
Yep, yeah. Really. So for 10 grand jump for a no time or a no score is really interesting. And I don't know what the ultimate answer would be. Would it be to give him the money but not count it in the standings? I'm not sure. But presumably the cowboys, through their event reps, would be the ones dictating how this goes. But it is a really interesting conversation. I was going to mention, I'm not going to go through every winner from the NFR Open, which ended Saturday night in Colorado Springs, but I will say I thought it was an interesting note that Dustin Iguzwiza and Levi Lord, who've been, you know, constant world title contenders, haven't quite gotten over the hump, but best friends in recent times, they recently changed partners to where Dustin's roping with JC Flake and Levi's roping with Shea Carroll. But because they qualified as a team from their circuit, they roped together and won the NFR Open. I thought that was you know, kind of an interesting note. You know, obviously they've still got the magic, and I believe they're still very great friends. They're just not roping partners. I was going to mention that when I was at in Cheyenne on Sunday, we got word, Oak got word actually, that Bill Duval died. And I'm just going to mention it because Bill and his little brother, Roy, the legend Duval, those guys, you know, the Shakota boys from the steer wrestling capital of the world, those are like good old boys back when that was a compliment. And they're, you know, Bill, nobody loved, I'm saying this because it's true, nobody loved rodeo or his family more than Bill Duval. And, you know, how many people he hazed for, including brother Roy, who's been to a record 24 NFRs, and like won his first title and NFR title with Bill hazing in 1985. You know, there's, it goes on and on and on. And then, but the fact that Bill Duval got both of his sons, Sam and Spud, made the NFR, and his grandson Riley made the NFR, and Bill's arena there in Shakota is like the door's wide open, you know, the water jug's in the barn. It's like the ultimate cowboy water cooler. You know, you sit on Bill's hay or whatever. And Bill and Imogene Duval are like these legendary, lovely Southern people. And anyway, his service, they'll bury him right there in Shakota by Bill and Roy's mom, Helen, by all accounts, was a total sweetheart. Those boys were born only 10 months apart, but people think of, you know, oh, the Duvals and all the winning and everything, but like go back to their childhood and you find that their work ethic came from, you know, they grew up with very little, you know, and those boys, when they were little kids, worked at the sawmill. They picked cotton, watermelons. They worked at their uncle's dairy operation. Like they worked their butts off for every single thing. And there's a lot of cool wisdom. And I was there the day in Colorado Springs when Roy shut down Colorado Springs and saved calf roping. And I'm certain that the young calf ropers of today don't know that a bulldogger led the charge to get that done. But anyway, rest in peace, Bill Riley, because he was one in a million and just a really good man. So,
you know what I remember when I was traveling with that? The Duvals were dirty tough. Like, you didn't mess with them either, right? You didn't. You better really think about it if you're gonna mouth off. Like, that's, I just knew at a very young age when they were standing there, just by the manners of everybody around them, they commanded respect because they would whip your butt.
Well, and you know what? There's, it's not like I'm sitting here being a proponent of violence, but from all the cool old timers that I grew up knowing, and all the stories, you know, Dale Smith and Jack Roddy and these different people, where they would be in board meetings and they would take it outside. And in 2025, you know, you throw a blow at somebody, you're probably going to get sued. There's something to be said for the way they handled it. It's like, if you want to be a chicken shit, let's step outside and handle it. And then we'll come back in and finish this meeting. There's a little piece of me that's like, you know, is it progress that everybody gossips behind each other's backs and, you know, bitches around and, you know, tells you one thing and then walks around the corner and says another? Probably not. And the Duvals, yes, I do believe they were the kind that would say, bullshit, let's go, you know? And, yeah. And, but also the humility, you know, so many people in this day and age do not live within their means, and you know, they want to showboat, and they're living on credit. The Duvals, when Oak traveled with the Duvals, like 1 year, 13 guys traveled together, and it was totally standard that with a little camper on the back of a truck and a bumper pull trailer, six of them went all the time. When, you know, and so when it was like Ricky Huddleston, Oates, Sam, you know, Bill, Roy, there was Kurt Butler and different ones, but Rod Lyman, but six guys in a truck. And by the way, the camper, it's not like today's living quarters that has AC or anything. There was no AC. But those guys, you know, they always took care of their own horses. They didn't have a driver. They, you know, bologna sandwich is fine. But, you know.
It's a different world now. I know you walked to school barefooted through a sticker patch. We all did when we were older. It's a different game. But can you imagine what that 13 guys collectively smelled like after
an all? Yes, I can. And I'm gonna bow up to you for your little bitch comment right there. Because no, I didn't.
It was always tougher back then.
Okay, I did not. It didn't snow where I grew up, for one thing, Skip. But because I just came from Cheyenne, where, by the way, they're building the backside of the grandstand where all the everybody watches Slack from, one of the huge grandstands. That entire back by where like the bucking horses and bulls are kept, back behind the bucking chutes, that. Coming in 2026, folks, is millions of dollars Indian Village, which is also taking away more parking. And so to my point, part of the nightmare at Cheyenne in 2025 is where to park everybody. And they're losing a huge amount of parking. When guys had 6 to 13 guys in one rig, we didn't have these problems.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, let me tell you what happens here. I'm not kidding you. I dare you to take a tape measure out to the parking lot, Salinas. There are rigs that come wheeling in here that are 80. I promise they're 80 something feet long. Like you can't. Like I've never seen anything like it. And out comes more and more horses. It's like a Shriner's car. You know, it's like, how many horses do you have in there? And then out comes the, you know, it's, but you know, these people are traveling on the road and, you know, there's change happening in the business, in the world. You know, what we're seeing is, and I'll reference it now, what we're going to see, Kendra, and you're not going to like it, but I predict we're going to see more of a push to do less contestants at a rodeo, less slack because of the expense. I mean, if we even, you know, because of the expense associated with it, and that is so much different, right, than what we grew up around, where Slack was a vital part of the event. And, you know, and it's kind of the pot calling the kettle black, because here we are at Salt Lake City saying that we can't do it. But I promise, if we had a 10-acre pasture where everybody could park and unload their horses on dirt, we wouldn't have a problem doing it. But I don't want horses to have to stand on asphalt and not have a stall to lay down in and stuff like that. So that's a logistic thing. But I think we're going to see, because the committees bear the burden, and we've had this conversation of the expense for that stuff. And it does help the community. We've talked about that. They eat, they buy feed. I get all that. But I have a sneaking suspicion that as things get tighter, and now with the border closed, I mean, time to vet cattle are a serious issue right now for rodeos. There's no more cattle, and the ones that they have are pretty much all used up. And so all of these things are compounding the issues. Cheyenne's taking up room for parking that they used to have. That means they're going to want less trailers there, which means they're going to want less contestants parking. And, it, you know, is that growing pains? Right? Are we growing? Or you know, and everybody has a different opinion on that.
And part of it is an old school factor to me that's a little bit sad, because, you know, the glory days that the generations just ahead of me that I grew up hearing all the stories and stuff about how it used to be, where you would go to a rodeo, Cheyenne or Salinas or whatever, and you'd stay there for a week, everybody. And all the timed event guys in Rough Sucker, they were all great friends. Their families all knew each other. They all camped out. They all hung out. And it was a wonderful thing. But some of these logistics are changing some of that. And I mean, you know, how many people for a Cheyenne or a Salinas, a lot, bought their PRCA card to go to one rodeo when they had the chance to go ahead and go? And the top 15 loved it because they considered it largely out of money. That, you know, so I'm not barking at anybody because I realize there's a whole new spectrum of factors that nobody had to deal with way back when people were pulling two horse trailers with a car, you know. It's different.
JW Stoker. Remember JW Stoker? His Cadillac and his trailer. And well, you know, and a couple side notes. Just this is fact. Half of the judges at Calgary are Canadian judges. Just putting that out on the post-it note. Okay. No other commentary. But that's part of the deal. Half of the judges are Canadian, half of them are American. Because I've seen a lot of you always see a lot of stuff about the Canadian and Americans and Calgary. Half of those judges are Canadian. And I wanted to bring up something, and you may have covered this in some of your writings and stuff, but how about this kid at the NFR Open, this Avery Mullins, the bull rider that ends up winning $23,000 and breaking his neck and his T3 and 5 and 6 on the last ride, rode 3 for 3, won it. I hadn't heard of him before, but he's obviously good, injured now. But, you know, he wins that thing, but breaks his neck and part of his back on the way. So I hope he heals up, and I hope it's not the type of injury that, you know, has longer-term mental and physical effects that wouldn't allow you to continue to be successful. But congratulations, but I hope for a speedy recovery for him.
Yeah, that's awful. See, and I was traveling, so I have not yet gotten to watch Saturday night of Colorado Springs. So yeah. I'm really sorry to hear
that. 3 for 3, had a 90-point ride, you know, came off wrong, moved up to 5 in the Resist All Rookie standings right after that. So, but I thought, you know, to win, because part of what I read said that, you know, while he was laying there injured, he heard that he had scored a 90 and he felt better for a minute. But I guess when your back's broken, your neck's broken, that's not good. But anyway, shout out to him. I thought that was cool.
Let me see something, because let me just see. Avery Mullins, cervical fracture, out. Injury date was the 12th, so that was Saturday night. Yeah, that's all it says. So cervical fracture, that's tough stuff. I hope it's not as bad as it sounds. Gosh, there's a pretty lengthy Justin injury report these days, you know.
Well, that's the time of year it is, right?
It's the season, yeah.
Well, that is really good rodeo news. The only thing, not really. I think I'm gonna wait. All right, Greg, let's do feedback. What do we got for feedback?
All right, guys, let's check out the feedback. So this one's from No Spinner CL. Love the show. I was wondering if you could shed some light on why the team roping slack for Cheyenne was weak. I do remember Thomas.
It was a week earlier.
Oh, it was a week earlier. Sorry. I do remember Tommy saying he talked to Mr. Herzig, and he said it was going to be early or in a different order from years past, but curious why. If it was a cattle issue or because the circuit finals of steer roping, the steers were not walking fresh as they traditionally are as well, and they seemed to be casting like the tripping steers. I was wondering if they were using the same set of cattle for both the steer roping and the team roping as they've done in the past at the CFD. Just curious on this. Keep up the awesome work. Thanks for a great show.
I do know that they ran the steers this year in the team roping first, and then they steer roped them second.
And I know that they wanted to give those cattle a break. So that's exactly why they moved it up, was to give those cattle a break. The team ropers got the first shot at them, and then the steer ropers got the second shot at them. So that's why they were, yeah, you're absolutely right, CL. That's exactly what it was, and they pushed it back to give those cattle a break before they did the steer ropers.
We just point blank said that the Mexican border is shut down again because of the screw worm stuff. Okay, so it's a struggle for time to vent cattle right now everywhere, pretty much.
Yeah, and you know, I just added it, like for our rodeo, I had a conversation with Heath. What we're going to end up doing is, because you know these sets of cattle that we had planned, right, are now so used, right, Kendra, they've just been on the road a lot. What we're going to do is, they're going to run 120 head of team roping cattle at Spanish Fork. And since they're ending earlier, we're going to pull off 45 of the best from those out of that first round and bring them over here because they'll be fresh cattle. It's just the reality of the stock contractors and the rodeo committees now tap dancing around having the right cattle for the event and doing the right thing for the cattle and for the contestants, just so everybody knows, it's very, very challenging because you can't get any new ones right now.
It's very challenging. And what cattle you do get are terribly expensive, like exponentially more expensive than they have been in years past. And it's very, very helpful to have people in the mix as, you know, who really savvy you can make it to where what's best for everybody. What you can make it really, if you know what you're doing, you can come up with the best option will be the best for the committee and the contestants and the fans. If you do it right, you know, maybe all the options aren't to perfection right now. Like we usually have more luxuries of better options, but making the best of a tough situation. If you have some cowboy comprende in the mix, you know, we talk about it sometimes how more and more rodeo committees are losing the cowboy touch and there are a lot more, you know, quote, business people or people from town who do it as a social occasion or whatever. But if you have someone who gets it, they, you know, like you've come up with a working solution that you feel is the best and you literally feel, unless I'm missing something, that it's the best thing for all involved, right?
We've preached this, you and I, and you and I are different, take different points of view. But one thing we agree on is that if people communicate and you try to do what's right for everybody involved with not one of any of the parties that we've always mentioned, the committees, the contractor, you know, with not anybody, you know, then we have a better option. And it's not always perfect. That's the other thing. You know, it isn't perfect. So every group that has their own list of needs for it to be perfect has to understand that maybe they have to chalk up, right, a token or two, everybody, to do just what you said, come up with the best mix, and everybody be understanding and grateful that we're able to put these events on and keep moving. It just keeps getting more expensive, Kendra. You know how it is. You go. It's funny because there's fans out there that complain about an $8 rodeo ticket, but they spend $15.50 to get their Starbucks macchiato that morning. But they want us to charge $8 for a ticket, and for instance, our rodeo bring in 800 contestants and 300 animals from 7 different states, and have a $40,000 motel bill. And it's just not as simple as it feels sometimes. And we're trying to touch on that.
Yeah, and that's why I think that the more open communication there could be between the different, you know, people involved, the better, because sometimes there's just a disconnect and people, if the truth could just be relayed from this group to this group to this group, it would really be helpful. And also if people, you know, would stop the self-serving behavior, try to minimize that and go for the go for the greater good, for the greater good of the sport, it would be very helpful.
It would, but that's never going to happen. That's the unfortunate thing, is that there's self-serving constituencies in every culture and bucket. And, you know, it's just the truth. But try to do, you know, I've always said it, do what's best first, or do what's right first, do what's best second. You know, if more people would take that approach, Kendra, right? Do what's right first. Because sometimes you have to do things that really aren't what's best, but it's the right thing to do. And that's a tough pill to swallow, but it's the right way to walk.
It is the right way to walk. And if you do it with the bigger picture in mind, sometimes you can do so much more good than you even realize. Or if you don't do that, you can cause so much more damage than you really understand. Before we go to the next feedback, I just wanted to mention that I think I mentioned that I went to the Hall of Fame festivities at Colorado Springs. And I was just going to mention that over $200,000 was raised for the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame over the weekend. That's
fantastic.
That's a big deal. And so I know there's a large fundraising component to all museums and halls of fame these days, but that's a lot of money.
You know, and you know this, but it's the only component. You know, we all want to have a wonderful Hall of Fame, but without the donors, and some of them donating way more than their share, those things don't make money. So if you're looking to continue the heritage of the sport, I would encourage everybody to figure out if there's a way that they can help the Hall of Fames, because those things are wonderful. They're wonderful. They're wonderful.
It's our history. And also, you know, a PS on mentioning Bill Riley Duval passing away on Sunday. Very cool. And so Bill, that they named the Justin Kelby Crisis Fund as their charity of choice in Bill's memory, you know, helping another cowboy. That's what he spent his life doing, you know? And so I think, you know, those are pretty cool. And the Hall of Fame, the inductions, they were fantastic. And sometimes the people you don't expect to be so choked up are the ones, you know. But, you know, there were people, you know, Skipper Voss is having memory issues, okay? And it was really cool that one of his, you know, one of the people he mentored, Rob Smets, got up there and kind of helped him through it. It was really pretty great, you know. Skipper taught, what did they call it, the steps, or was it? Or this move, you know? And so it was like, you know, how many saves has Rob Smets made? But that was a very touching thing that he did. And I know how much Skipper appreciated it, you know. And you know, Joyce Koenig, like, her grandsons helped her walk up there, you know. She's older now, but listening to her talk about her life, you know, and Pam Minnick, I don't even think you know Pam, and then you're like, wait, what? You did what, you know, and it's just, I don't know, Mac Altizer to finally get his due. People want to, you know, call him controversial, but every rodeo in the United States of America now has followed his lead, if I'm not mistaken, with the rock and roll, right?
Well, he changed everything. He brought, yes, got fan entertainment, marketing. And if you look at it, the music, everything that Mac did, and he had a cult following. I mean, still does to this day. And that's not a bad thing. The Altizers, you know, the painted brand on the hips and the stickers in the communities, all these little things that, you know, were part of creating that bad company culture. And for something to live on as long as it has, right, Kendra? Right? Because you still, you know, that's a statement in what a job he did from a branding perspective, and absolutely deserves to be there. Glad he made it.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Matt gets props. You know, nobody had more fun than the Bad Company Rodeo crew. Oh, but also, you know, Trevor Brazil does not pass out empty compliments. And he said, Mac Altizer's rodeos were literally the only ones in the timed events where you did not have to go check the draw because you knew they were all good. That is a tall compliment.
Absolutely.
You know? And they had buck in stock and what, the party animal that, you know, that was part of their deal. And, you know, that was really something. I'll never forget my first Bad Company rodeo because it was like, wow.
Well, it was so fun. And Skipper Voss, I grew up with Skipper Voss, like literally, like I'm talking, remember Skipper from when I was 10, him and my dad were very good friends. And I just have to say, he was one of those kinds of cowboys that was soft-spoken and humble and willing and just literally in his, and you know, I don't know, he's 6 foot something. Skipper's tall. Right. And I just enforce what a great person Skipper was. Right. And literally, and I think Rob would say it changed Rob's life, not just in arena, but out of the arena.
Yes. And what Rob said was he was one of those people that was so generous. He held nothing back when he helped a young person. Like he would help somebody else beat him, you know, and I didn't realize till now that he was a college football player and pole vaulter, you know, obviously an amazing athlete, but he was also clearly a big hearted human being and he helped all the up and comers. He answered all the questions and he didn't hold anything back, you know, any secrets. He helped everybody and pretty great. So step through.
Yep, the old step. For those of you who don't know that, the step through, the traditional bullfighter circled the animals, but the step through was when Skipper would go one direction, right, and then step through, turning his back to the bull, and switch directions, right. It was literally changing your human lead and utilizing the lead of the bull, right? If the bull's leading to the right and doing the step through to the left so that you got in down to his corner. And that's what kind of started these guys. You see these bullfighters now, if you watch bullfights, they're down in the corner, they're up in that front shoulder, right? And to get there was always a problem. If you can imagine, if you're running a circle, does that make sense? But with the step throughs and the fakes that Skipper literally invented. It changed, again, you, Skipper, Mac, those are the people that belong in Hall of Fame, that literally change the way people, Roy right. Cooper, the way people do it fundamentally.
Yes, and that there are future generations that won't have even heard of them because it's so many generations removed will be impacted. That's having some influence for sure. Yeah.
All right, well, let's roll along. Greg, what do we got for the next feedback?
All right, it's from JJ. I was wondering if you guys had any advice for someone trying to get their foot in the door to the contract acts side of a rodeo. I'm trying to start clowning, but I don't know how to get the first rodeos booked. I've reached out to a lot of clowns and have gotten some good advice, mainly don't do it for free and microphone recommendations and stuff like that. I talked to Justin Rumford and he told me to go up to Cody and I'm trying to get up there next summer when I can take 2 weeks off of work, but I just want to try and start here locally in Utah until then. But I have never done anything on the contract personnel side of rodeo and is wondering the best way to go about getting into it.
Well, here's the deal. I remember when Anthony Lucia walked into my Piranha office and said, "Hey, brother, I'm trying to decide whether I want to be a trick roper or an announcer. What do you think?" And I said, "Well, be an announcer because all you got to pack is your vocal cords and you can do it till you're 102. You'll make more money as an announcer." And then he said, "Yeah, great. I want to be an announcer. Will you use me?" And I went, "After you go announce for a couple of years." And it was like the balloon and Anthony's balloon deflated. Here's the problem, or not the problem. Here's my advice. This isn't Monopoly where you land on free parking. If you want to be the best, go out there and get some rodeos under your belt. go do stuff. And you know what? Maybe go do stuff that's original. Don't just watch a bunch of videos. Don't learn a handful of jokes. Don't buy a $150 wireless microphone and never shut up on it. Go learn how to entertain people in the contract act world. Find out how to entertain people and go work some rodeos. Because here's the deal. It's not going to do you any good or anybody else any good for you to jump from go to a good rodeo and not have your best performance. So go out there. There's a lot of rodeos out there. There's a lot of great amateur rodeos. There's a lot of great open rodeos. There's a lot of great things. Go get some experience. Because we all know that it's just miles. It's just miles. So if you want to know my hint on this, go get some miles on your truck. Go get some work. You can talk to all the great clowns and everything, and there's no shortcut to being great. There's just not. So go out there, work your ass off, become good, become great, and you know what? You won't have to figure this out because they'll start calling you.
Well, and you know what? I would say that what you just said applies to being a contestant, being a rodeo journalist, being a sound man, being a, you know, and it applies to everything, right? I mean, you kind of got to start in the trenches and do a lot of observing and work your tail off. That's how you get good at something.
Amen.
So, he's got to go out and market himself. He's got to reach out to those amateur rodeos and the smaller ones and say, hey, let me come out and do this and, you know, get himself in that way.
I agree, though, but there's a lot of people out there that are really good at marketing, but there ain't nothing behind their brand. Just because you're good at something doesn't mean that you're good in the arena.
Well, no, but you got to get into the arena to make people see you.
I agree. Right?
So but that's what you got to have the marketing into an arena. I'm not saying he's going to go to Cheyenne and be like, hey, hire me and wheels and deals his way in there. I'm just saying he's got to get in to start.
You have to get a chance. And like, there are so many thousands of itty bitty open rodeos and, you know, country rodeos and different things like that. But it's just, if you're really good, you know, somebody's going to be there at the, you know, country rodeo out in the hills of Oklahoma. And if you're hilarious, somebody's going to hear about it. And, you know, that's how these things go. And it's like, my first story was for $50 for Bob Feist, you know, and but if you're good, they will find you. It will work for you. So. But that's, somebody gave him a good, you know, the idea of working at the Cody Knight Rodeo, that's a good tip.
That's where I started. I pulled an inline single horse trailer with a sway back paint horse in it. I bungee tied the barrel, my clown barrel, on the back, and I stuck my trick goat in the clown barrel, and I drove from Texas to Cody, Wyoming. Lost my brakes in Meteetse, Wyoming, went through the town going 90 miles an hour with a screaming goat, a barrel, a swayback horse, and a really scared 17-year-old guy. Got to Cody, Wyoming. I had Ike Sankey throw me the keys to this Cadillac car with this giant set of horns on it and a big horn on the top. And he said, now, here's the list of the 12 campgrounds that you got to go to. Now, let me tell you something. You pull in a campground at 8 o'clock in the morning with a Cadillac car and a horn and go, Cody Knight Rodeo. But that's my point, right? I took the cab over camper off the truck, staked it to the ground. By the way, it got blown over twice while I was in it, sleeping in Cody, Wyoming, and fought bulls. And then during the day, guided whitewater trips. But Cody is a good example. But again, it's go get it. Go out there, go do it. Cody was great because you do it every night. You better come up with something new because every night you get sick. I got sick of Ike Sankey turning out the rope and steer that hooked everybody and him not opening the gate till the rope and steer ran over me. You know Ike Sankey, ask him. He'll He'll laugh about that. I finally got to where I just stood there. Let him run over me so he'd open
me. And I'm guessing that the pay wasn't exactly royal, right?
No, I made a lot more money guiding Whitewater than I did as a rodeo clown.
Right, but that's how bad you wanted it.
I learned so much about life, about, you know, here's the deal. It's not easy. Things aren't going to go perfect. You're not going to be great when you start. Your first article, well, you might not agree with this, Kendra, but I bet your first article wasn't your best writing, right? So you got to get some miles. That's how you get better. Cody's a great place to start. New Jersey, like these nightly rodeos are fantastic places. I tell you what, people went to Branson and learned how to entertain people at Branson. They'll hire you at Branson, Missouri to be a part of one of those shows. A lot of opportunities out there, but you got to be willing to do it the hard way.
Sure. Speaking of Branson, a rodeo family has the pig contract for the racing pigs. Just a little tidbit there.
Really?
Yes. And it's great, I guess. Anyway, you just got to have fresh pigs coming on in. But anyway, let's finish her off here. What do we have here?
So KN says, hi, question. If Stetson and Wasey don't make the NFR in saddle bronc and bull bareback, are they still eligible to win the all-around championship?
Okay, so for one thing, Stetson's events are saddle bronc riding and bull riding, and Wasey's are bareback riding and bull riding. But absolutely, a lot of years, there have been plenty of years where you know, nobody made the NFR in two events. All you need, unless something has changed, to be eligible for the world all around championship is to have a minimum of $3,000 won in, say, your second event. So there have been times when, you know, in the top 5 or 10 in the all around, maybe you have, well, I remember, say, for example, when world champion team roper Junior Nogueda wanted to join in, he had, say, if a guy has so much won in this single event because he's having a dominating season, but he needs to be eligible, he's got to win at least $3,000 in his second event. In his case, it was the tie down roping, but absolutely. So, you know, of course, if you make it in two, it's a extraordinary advantage, but yes, you are still eligible.
It's a goal. Yes. Yeah.
So anyway.
So absolutely. All right. We got any more, Greg?
Nope, that's it. Just want to remind everybody that you can send your feedback to nospinfeedback@gmail.com or text us at 817-668-2395.
We only use your area codes. We won't say your name, so don't worry about it. Don't say what you think. Send it to us. We'll talk about it. Well, it's a fast and rapid time, and we want to thank all of you for joining us tonight. Thank you, Kendra, again the nuggets that you bring in your travels are a wonderful thing to all of us in the sport. Thank you for a part of it. Thank you all for joining us. This has been episode 67 of No Spin Rodeo. You guys be safe. Remember your family, they're important. Talk to y'all later.